You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Every year, some 4 million people are released from our prisons, and nearly a quarter of them have suffered from major depression. Many have not gotten adequate treatment while they were incarcerated, which means they return to society in worse mental shape than when they were first incarcerated. A team of researchers led by Michigan State University has come up with a cost-effective way to deliver better mental health care in prisons. Jennifer Johnson is a professor of public health at MSU's College of Human Medicine and is the lead author of the research. Jennifer, your study is breaking new ground. I know it's the first randomized study for major depression in a population of incarcerated people. So what's the scale of this problem? What did you find?
So this was an intervention study, right? So the scale of the problem has been established before. About 25%, 23% of prisoners will have had major depressive disorder. And, you know, prisons and jails do the very best they can with the resources that they have. But given that, you know, more than half of the people in prison and jail have mental health disorders and the resources for treating them tend to be limited, often there just aren't enough providers to go around. So one of the things we did in this study was that we looked at, is there a way to provide a standard treatment for major depression that we could make more cost effective? So we made it into a group intervention. We used some prison mental health providers, but also some providers that weren't necessarily trained specially in mental health or substance use counselors or reentry planners to see if we could use them as service extenders to reduce the cost.
So the idea is to try to find a more cost-effective way and to just get more people into these prisons and jails to be able to work with prisoners who need it. And, you know, when you stop and you think about 15 million people touch this criminal justice system in our country every year, what does it say that this is 2019 and yours is the first study looking at how to effectively treat depression in prison?
You know, it says that we tend to neglect the health of those who are involved in the justice system. You know, there is, I think, a knee-jerk reaction that people have that they think that people in the system are other or different or fundamentally separate. And I'm, you know, probably thought that before I started working in the system. You know, you think about what you see on TV, you see bars and people who are going away for life, but that isn't the vast majority of people who are involved. 10 million of those people per year are going through what they call pretrial jail detention, which is where you get arrested, picked up, held for a few days. You may or may not even be charged. And it's interesting because I think that there is this sort of sense that people involved in the justice system, they must have done something wrong. So we're very concerned with, you know, what do they deserve? What do they not deserve? But, you know, providing adequate health care isn't condoning crime. And, you know, one in 34 people in the U.S. are currently involved in the system. They say that probably one in 10 men in their lifetime will be behind bars. So we just incarcerate so many people here in the United States that we can't ignore their health because the health of detainees is public health.
Can you give us perhaps a real life example that you might have studied? What happens when people do get out from a prison, get out from jail, and they have not gotten effective treatment for their depression?
You know, it makes everything harder. Getting released is very difficult. I've worked with both women and men, but I've worked especially with women. And sometimes people feel better when they get out, but a lot of times their depression may actually get worse when they get out because they go out to all the same problems a lot of times that got them there in the first place. You know, the boyfriend who says that he is clean and has a place to live is living in his car and dealing drugs, or you know, they're worried about their children, or they may have to make choices between going to substance use treatment or, you know, being with teenage children who may be in trouble and may really need them. Their lives are complicated. And, you know, depression is known to have effects on your ability to function, your ability to find employment, your ability to think things through. So it's just that much more difficult to deal with all the things you need to deal with coming back into the community when you're depressed.
Jennifer, can you give us a sense of the, you were saying they do the best they can, prison authorities. What kinds of mental health services are typically available to people who are incarcerated in Michigan?
So in prison, you know, in the states where I've worked, the most common intervention is medication. And everyone in our trial that I led had major depressive disorder. Many of them were on medication and it just wasn't doing the trick for them. We found, though, that often people are reluctant in prison to identify themselves as having a mental health problem. Sometimes that can interfere with parole. Sometimes, you know, they don't trust the prison mental health providers. Or sometimes they do want treatment, but, you know, resources are scarce. I wondered in one of the states where I was working, I looked around and realized I was the only PhD level provider in the state besides somebody who was running the entire state mental health service. And when I thought about why that was, I realized, you know, the administrators know about the mental health need. They know, in essence, that part of what they're doing is running a treatment facility, but their budgets are set by state legislators and they are answerable to the public, right? And nobody ever really runs on, I'm going to improve health care for prisoners.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the problem. And if you hear anything about incarceration, you know, during campaigns, it's I'm going to put criminals behind bars. So it's tough. And, you know, a lot of folks actually are more effectively and less expensively treated in the community. There's a lot of research evidence that shows that for substance use in particular, treating people in the community is just as effective in reducing substance use and crime and is about a third of the cost of incarceration. And, you know, the same goes for mental health. So our policies don't necessarily reflect that. And then jails actually are even harder. Jails are at a county level and the money is appropriated at the county level and people are in and out so quickly. You know, they may have 30 people coming in every day. You know, I've known jails that had 13,000 people a year going through the jail and one day a week of a psychiatrist.
Boy, that's a lot of unaddressed need. And when you stop and then you think if people get out in worse shape mentally than they were before they went in, then society is going to pay a cost there.
Right. And, you know, whenever you incarcerate somebody, especially for a short amount of time in jail, you typically disrupt their medications, right? If they're on medications for mental health issues, you know, even serious mental health issues like, you know, psychosis or mania. And so sometimes the jails are able to get them connected to care in the community, but oftentimes people are just in and out so quickly and the jails are so under-resourced that they can't do that.
So in your study, you and your colleagues, you trained a team to treat 181 inmates through something called IPT, interpersonal psychotherapy, and you found that actually helped more than the medication or whatever was happening prior. What is IPT and why does it work?
IPT is one of the two best validated psychotherapies for major depression in the community. And I would say, you know, between antidepressants, something called cognitive behavioral therapy, and interpersonal psychotherapy or IPT, those are the three frontline treatments for major depression. And what IPT does, as a therapist, you talk to the person and find out when their current down mood started. So not back when they were 12, but, you know, maybe 5 months ago or 10 months ago or whenever it was. And, you know, talk to them about what was going on in their life. And oftentimes it falls into one of four categories: grief, a life change. It could be going to prison, getting out of prison, divorce, losing kids, you know, in any of those kind of things. Conflicts with people who are important to you or social isolation. And then what IPT does is it works to set goals in those areas and to help people address those issues and build social support. And what's interesting about it for prisoners is that the prevailing wisdom is that interventions for prisoners need a lot of structure, behavioral change, and that's true. That is absolutely true. But the things that keep people in the justice system up at night are those things. You know, they're worried about their kids. They're worried about their mom. They're worried about, you know, will their partner be faithful? Or, you know, if the partner is abusive, should they go back to them or not? Or, you know, it's these very human things that keep people up at night, and providing them a place to talk about those things and really deal with those issues was unique and very important.
So your study used, as you said, master's level health therapists, bachelor's level reentry counselors. So that let you get help to more people without having to hire new mental health professionals. So tell us, after the treatment sessions, could you measure an improvement? What did you see? What kind of effect did it have on the inmates?
You know, relative to prison treatment as usual, adding IPT reduced depressive symptoms significantly, reduced hopelessness very significantly, reduce post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms and increase rates of remission from major depression.
So it made a difference.
It did make a difference, yes. And you know, what was interesting is the effects on hopelessness were particularly strong. And we didn't see effects on suicidality because there weren't really high rates of suicidality in this particular sample, but hopelessness is strongly related to suicidality. So reducing hopelessness matters because then they can go on and try to make things be different.
So you are offering this up to really to corrections departments around the country as a possible system of treatment that is cost effective, seems to work. What is the next question you want to study?
The next question is how to help the systems adopt it. We've already had calls from one state, for example, and their challenge was that they could afford the initial training, but they couldn't afford some ongoing check-ins to make sure that the therapist stayed on track. So the next question is how to make the training process as streamlined as possible so that prison systems can use the intervention, the providers can get trained in it in the most cost-effective way possible.
Jennifer Johnson, professor of public health at MSU's College of Human Medicine and lead author of this study published in Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology. Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Thank you.